Hello, everybody. Welcome to a new episode of Tech Can Save Us podcast brought to you by Literal Humans. As always, I am Paul David, one of your co-hosts. Unfortunately, my co-host Maya couldn't make it today. She had a conflicting appointment, but we have a fantastic guest today. We're going to be talking to Elliot Code, the founder of Ecology. Welcome to the pod, Elliot.
Paul, thank you very much. Delighted to be here.
Yeah, really good to have you. We've been chatting about getting you on the pod for a while now since we did some work way, way back in our agency journey with the folks at TreeCard, who I know are connected. And interconnected space there. So I'm really happy to have you on.
Absolutely. All good to be part of the tree planting community that you're building here.
So just by way of introduction, you work at Ecology, which is an all-in-one climate platform that aims to help SMBs reduce their carbon footprint and fund climate projects. You recently stepped down from the role as CEO last year to focus on your advisory business, Planetary Scale. Is that right?
That's it.
And can you tell us a bit, like, just about Planetary Scale? I gather you help climate startups launch and scale, but just want to—it's kind of in the name there. But like, what exactly do you do at Planetary Scale these days?
Yeah, absolutely. It's good to have it in the name. I was a fan of having such a clean label there. So I founded Ecology 5 years prior, or maybe 6 years prior, and then last year an opportunity came up just to. I'm still with Ecology, and but for a few days a week, I'm able to help other climate startups and nature restoration startups go on their own scaling journey. And it just fills me with absolute joy. For one thing, it's nice not having the direct responsibilities and people management and everything that goes with someone else's business. And you can come in with your outside perspective on what they're doing and help them find the answers. So it's so rewarding working with about 4 or 5 different climate startups now. And great to be able to amplify the impact, I guess.
That's really cool. Yeah, I hear what you're saying. One, from like sort of managing a big team and just the travails of that, but also from the agency side, being able to work across a bunch of different climates, especially in a space as dynamic as climate tech. So that's very cool. Good to hear about your journey. Just want to set the scene for our audience, and we've been doing a lot of episodes this year on climate tech, and we've spoken previously on the pod about the voluntary carbon market, the VCM. We had John Leland on, who's the chief sustainability officer at Kickstarter, and we kind of walked through the pros and cons with him. We'd love for you to just explain for our audience the difference between this carbon neutral standard and the corporate standard for net zero. Just kind of like set the scene about, you know, kind of what's going on in that carbon market right now.
So right now, the difference between carbon neutral and net zero standard has so many other themes and ideas and criticisms all wrapped into one. And I feel like it really sums up companies and their strategy on making carbon reductions. It's almost in a nutshell. So carbon neutral standard, older standard, has been around as a standard for 15 odd years and as an idea for much longer. In that standard, lots of progress is made, you know, how to report your emissions and all sorts. But one fatal mistake was made where you could essentially offset all of your carbon emissions by funding great climate action around the world. But the problem lies in what happens when you offset your emissions. You also get the kind of the big tick that says your business is now carbon neutral. Now, that washes away a lot of detail about where the emissions still lie within that business. And theoretically, that business still hasn't made much reductions in its footprint, whereas enter net zero standard for corporates that doesn't allow that. It still says you should be funding those same projects around the world. That's your duty and responsibility, but hasn't done anything in terms of offsetting your footprint itself. To achieve net zero, you have to make over 90% reductions in your carbon footprint before you can think about using offsets to take the last hard 10% away. And this is a really big kind of moment for businesses taking responsibility and not overstating the progress that they've been making. So as Ecology, from when we saw it being drafted up, we were all in on that concept, which had never been an idea that you can say, you know, offset all your emissions and you're carbon neutral. That's sweeping too much under the rug, for sure.
And we'd love to hear a bit more too about, that's super interesting, just kind of like the challenges that you see SMBs running into when they're trying to reduce or offset their emissions. Like, it seems like, for smaller companies, like it tends to be something that kind of falls off the priority list. They're super focused on just growing or staying afloat, especially in this economy. So love to hear how you kind of coach and support folks through those challenges, particularly SMBs.
It's such a problem, especially with the, where's the return on investment? investment for business. And, you know, there is research out there that says, in theory, you should be well rewarded by looking after the planet, by your customers rallying around you and potentially differentiation, that your bottom line should see something positive, not just a cost. But that's a big leap. As you say, you know, is the business paying payroll, and what's your runway, and all sorts? You know, can you be able to dig into your pockets right now for something really indirect of a return? And, you know, it is difficult, and it relies on who's at the heart of that business and what ethics do they have, and, you know, where do their priorities lie? It's so difficult. And I think one thing that is almost like an elephant in the room that no one's really talking about is that how hard it is to actually reduce your carbon emissions. You know, many businesses, while we're not talking about that, while it's like, oh, we can add this technology, or, you know, you can do such and such, you know, and why aren't you halving your emissions? You know, there aren't many businesses that have the confidence to be able to say, every business is having this exact conversation in the boardroom and the kind of the team meetings, that, you know, we all need together to be making this progress. But for now, it is going to be difficult. So the problem is that every business right now is just thinking, you know, why aren't we doing enough? And this is really hard. Why are we finding this hard? But haven't really realized that it's at industry scale, everyone is finding this hard. I think things would be so much more progressive if we just had that kind of more grown-up conversation that it is difficult and we're by your side. So for SMBs and enterprises, most businesses aren't setting fire to things that are causing emissions within their offices or factories. This is, the emissions are happening way beyond their, you know, fancy office in, I don't know, Soho, like I think you're dialing in from, or, you know, where, you know, these emissions are happening at the tech giants, you know, for all the web servers and all the services and contractors and, you know, all the legal teams that are employed, you know, and they're all their suppliers. And so it starts with real progress comes with having dialogue with your suppliers. You know, it seems so counterintuitive, but having that conversation with a supplier to say, what are you doing about your carbon emissions? Do you know your emissions? Can you send us your carbon footprint? And, you know, that kind of soft pressure to say, we need that information because we're going on our own net zero journey. And imagine if all the businesses and all their suppliers in the value chain, we're all having these conversations, then we go like, numbers are ready, you know, and customers are allowed to select, go like, okay, you've got your numbers, I'm going to switch from you because these other carbon footprint numbers from your competitor are better. And then in the boardroom of that supplier, be like, we're losing customers because we're not as carbon efficient as our competitor. And then there's a more of a motive. And so there's a big network of potential there, how we could move an entire industry across the world all at once by just having the simple conversation about what is our supplier doing with its carbon emissions.
Thanks for that. And cool, we'll jump to the second question here, which is just like reflecting on your time at Ecology. And obviously as founder, you know, you've got a lot of say about kind of how things were set up in the beginning, and love to hear about kind of the specific, you know, gaps or inefficiencies in the climate action space that you all identified that, you know, you set up Ecology to address, and specifically how Ecology helps businesses, you know, take meaningful climate action.
Well, absolutely. From the first day that we started Ecology, it was obvious that the impact that you were making as a business, let's say just planting a tree, you know, around 2019 at the time, you may get like a little thumbnail image of, you know, an example tree, two paragraphs, and maybe a PDF certificate. And that was just not enough for me. You know, I wanted to put my money into climate action, and I wanted to be able to be connected with this and fall in love with this tiny amount of impact. And then if I fell in love with that small action, then that maybe that would encourage me to take ever increasing and larger steps. And I bottled that up and said, you know, what if we put that at the heart of Ecology? Where, you know, if you think about all the fears and pains that anyone has in terms of trying to do the right thing, they go, is this a good project? How do I know if it's actually happened or not? You know, will I be accused of greenwashing if I take these steps? And we kind of wrapped all those up and made those an opportunity for Ecology, because I know every business is thinking this. Every business doesn't want to be putting a step wrong, because that's the opposite of doing a good thing. You know, tackling climate action is one of those things that can quite easily reverse in direction from a public perception point of view very easily. I can't think of any other type of kind of voluntary action a business can do that could potentially kind of fall back on them if they didn't take the right steps. So we wanted to make this very easy, very comfortable, very safe. And so technology was this massive enabler. So for one, we saw, and my wife, I say we, you know, this is me and Lucy, my wife at the beginning, she's an amazing designer and, you know, brilliant at brand. And we wanted to see, if you planted some trees, we want to see these trees, you know, visualize them, come to life. So we have this kind of virtual forest. You tap on each individual tree. And for a lot of our tree planting providers and those kind of nonprofit organizations, we can actually take a photo of that particular tree and see it, have seen it in the ground, and a GPS location and a particular species and a particular day it went in the ground. And all of a sudden you're connected in a way that you hadn't been elsewhere. And, you know, those small actions we see time and time again, just ramping up into more. So we now have over 20,000 businesses on our books. 15 of them are large enterprises. Many of them have started with just the idea that maybe they'll plant a few trees on behalf of their employees at Christmas instead of a gift. And then we'll see that same customer come back maybe 6 months later and make a much bolder declaration of intent. So that now we're going to do net zero. We're going to do this by the book. We're going to have science-based targets. We're going to have them validated. We're going to measure our emissions properly. We're going to offset all of our residual emissions historically. And so that was a real bit of a secret sauce, really. We made the lowest bar on the ladder, not to reduce the quality, but to enable those businesses, so many businesses who weren't making progress, to enable them to make progress and to, you know, create kind of future sustainability stars just by getting them excited, getting them attached and getting them in love with the impact and maybe a little bit addicted to future impact that they could make.
That's really cool. And I appreciate the point about, you know, kind of where you set the bar, because I feel like, you know, we're in a world where everyone's talking about greenwashing and companies, you know, not doing enough and things like that. And, you know, it's important, I think, to remember that like every person, every company is on a journey, and sort of, I think where you set the bar and how you hold them to account for, you know, really matters. So it's really interesting to like see folks really getting in there and like doing the hard and tricky work of, you know, bringing folks along on that journey. And a lot of that has to do with the expectation setting and the bar setting. So definitely appreciate that.
Now, how do you actually know about the projects are delivering what they say they were? And anyone under the sun will have heard about poor quality projects, even cowboy carbon offset projects that are just absolutely atrocious. And, you know, for Ecology, we try and fund just literally the top 1% of all projects that are available. And, you know, to go about and to do that, there's no one box that could be ticked. There's no one certification that will have just catered for that. And then we get to kind of like, oh, we'll just pick any of these projects that have been certified to this level. There's no one technology, although technology is really helping here. Maybe we'll get the chance to chat about that. But it takes this kind of huge combination of it's hard work, really. It's like, you know, and to do that hard work must be because you're going to allow some time for that work to happen, and you know that it's important. So, you know, like any company that was founded solely to essentially help restore the planet, you know, when it's in the DNA of your team members, you know, from junior to the execs, that they know that they're only here to do the right job, then it allows you to create time and allows you to kind of put in that hard work to be able to end up with a list of projects that should be funded, or, you know, end up with a tool that helps you understand your business's carbon footprint in a much more detailed way than you could have seen before. And so that's something where we really absolutely pride ourselves on. And then there's other things, you know, when you're dealing with nature, you're dealing with the unknown and things are happening around the planet that you're so far away from. You know, technology is a massive enabler. You can see a tree, or trees are upright and standing from space, which is what you weren't able to do just, you know, even till recently. But nothing beats visiting the project. It tells you the rest of the story, though that's not what's told from space. I came back from Kenya recently, visiting one of our largest tree planting projects. And I went thinking carbon and trees and maybe a bit of nature, and hoping that it was all looking good. But what, I mean, that I did have that area fulfilled, thankfully, an amazing partner, Eden Reforestation. But what I hadn't been prepared for was all the other effects of great work happening. So I think ecology now help over 40,000 workers and planters and tree planters around the world. And some of them came up to me quite spontaneously, and some shook my hand and said, thank you for putting food on my family's table at night. You know, this was their first pay packet they've ever received. That's fair wage and has locked in for multiple years in terms of the project length. Another said to me earlier that, you know, my grandfather has said that this dried riverbed has been dry since he was a boy. And now it's starting to trickle with, you know, just a small stream in that vast riverbed, because there's now vegetation growing where, you know, some of our forests are starting to mature on the side of their mountainside. And those rivers will then obviously nourish the lower lands of East Africa and, you know, one day alleviate many out of the drought and poverty. And it was just absolutely extraordinary being there, seeing a project and seeing all the other layers and mechanisms and communities coming to life. And yeah, you know, we didn't get that from the satellite monitoring, that's for sure.
That's powerful. I mean, and just to sort of connect the dots, I mean, the fact that you're doing that with, you know, the sort of onslaught of climate change that's affecting those regions that you're talking about particularly acutely, you know, in sub-Saharan Africa, for example, is what you brought in. I think that's really critical, like that, you know, no time like the present to get those projects done and get rivers retrickling and, you know, things like that's such a powerful result. Makes me think of, I use faith in nature, you know, body care products like shampoos and conditioners. And I love to look at the bottle and see how, I think it's Rivka Rose is the founder and sort of executive there, but the boss is listed as nature, you know, and like keeping nature as like your, you know, biggest shareholder, stakeholder. I think Patagonia does this as well, where like, you know, everything we do needs to result in a positive, you know, EROI, right? Like environmental return on investment, right? I think that's such a fascinating way to kind of position your business. And I think it connects with this idea that like, pretty soon all tech is going to need to be climate tech. And I think that's such a powerful, like it's every piece of tech, whether it's fintech, HR tech, health tech, is going to need to have a sustainability element. And I think, you know, the work that you've done with ecology is sort of paving the way for thinking that way, along with some of those other examples I mentioned. So appreciate that.
Yeah, I love the EROI. That's very cool. And, you know, the meeting businesses that are so small and have such meager resources, and but the amount that they put into, you know, flying the flag and walking the walk as much as possible is incredible. It's so inspiring. And, you know, they show up for the larger businesses. And I think that's what the opportunity is for SMBs, that they can show up the bigger ones to say, look, you know, we haven't got the vast budgets. You know, we haven't got access to all the consultants in the world to be able to do this ourselves. But, you know, we're punching above our weight. And, you know, making those others look like the laggards, and, you know, signaling through brands and on the kind of the airwaves of LinkedIn is just so important. You know, that is a voice that they have, and that is something very powerful they have, rather than their budgets. If they can't do huge amount of climate action this year, but they can make some noise, and, you know, they can raise the bar and they can keep the conversation flowing, because my goodness, you know, climate needs to be on the agenda. And, you know, I think in the UK right now, it's agenda point number 4 or 5, you know, in terms of top concerns. And it's worrying, but keeping that conversation alive is a real secret weapon that small and nimble businesses have.
I mean, I have a sense of how you might respond to this, but just this, that we've had, you know, different guests on, and they talk about, you know, there's like the stat being thrown around about like 70% of the emissions are coming from, you know, big corporations and things like that. And we had, you know, a gentleman by the name of Dominic Shales on, who, you know, specializes in the steel and concrete industry, and mentioned like a single factory in China that's producing 1% of like global emissions, you know, just because of what it's churning out. So when people sort of come to you with like, oh, we should be focused here because this is where, you know, the real meat of the sort of, you know, emissions are coming from, how do you sort of respond to that, you know, given your focus on SMBs and, you know, quote unquote, the bottom of the pyramid, as it were?
Yeah, I think about it a lot, and I love the opportunity that also comes with it, you know, SMBs or anyone, you know, the intern or someone, you know, they can sit at any desk at any business and they can raise their voice for environmental. And, you know, internally it's good pressure. And then externally too, you know, you think about maybe 1% of emissions came from one company in China, but, you know, I'd imagine their customers are around the globe. And, you know, recently the UK and UK government is really celebrating how it's halved its emissions since 1990. And really, it tells you only a tiny part of the picture. You know, that's just because we're not doing anything here in the UK anymore that's producing those emissions. We're not, you know, the steel industry is elsewhere and we're importing all those emissions from China. And, you know, really, we are one single hyper-connected web. And that is also the opportunity. Because, you know, how do you change hundreds of millions of businesses around the world? There's something like, you know, let's imagine 100 million businesses, which there easily is, you know, lots of them very small. How do you get to them? It's that rich web of supplier and supplier demand, that kind of value chain that every business sits within. Now, if you have that one conversation with your supplier, and then maybe they have to chat to their other, you know, supplier up and up, and, you know, and then all of a sudden, maybe that one conversation could have sparked so many others around the planet. And, you know, that's why it's not our emissions, it's not China emissions, it's all our emissions. And, you know, the more we can continue to have those conversations and, you know, be less pointy about us versus them, but it's just simply all and our emissions. And, you know, we will together move the dial here. And, you know, I don't, you know, from one side, it's not necessarily technology breakthrough or, you know, hoping that carbon removal is going to be scaled up insanely. I think it's about just placing climate as a conversation that you as a customer or supplier will influence that next action that's happening somewhere around in the world, around elsewhere. I love that. Imagining a whole hive of 100 million connections all starting to have those conversations. And that for me is progress. And that will be, I think, one day the solution too.
Yeah, it really shows you too, like how an issue of this magnitude, you know, climate change, like climate action is going to need to be solved through so many different angles. And like, you know, even you look at the models, like technology that doesn't even exist yet, you know, like the models of us, you know, not surpassing, you know, 1.5, 2, 3, whatever the new threshold is, depend on solutions that haven't been even developed yet, partnerships that haven't even been thought of yet. That's both challenging, but also inspiring, you know, in a way. So appreciate the multi-pronged approach.
I just love that idea. And, you know, I think of solutions as being as a natural outcome of just impassioned people who can come together, who feel like they can make a difference. You know, just bright people anywhere, bring them together, and then we will have the solutions to be able to tackling it. You know, I think of, you know, in the past, you know, massive revolutions have happened because just a small minority kind of came together and they made, you know, huge, huge changes within their country, new legislation, new kind of equality for those who have been underserved. If there's just, imagine just like 5-10% of people around the world who maybe took 20 minutes out of their day just to make sure that they flew the flag for climate and nature, we'd be in a much better position than we are now. And that's not many people. And maybe even these people don't realize that they're doing it. But if we know that we could essentially create and foster that kind of idea that those small conversations will add up and something kind of massive. I love that. And if I wasn't doing this, then I'd love to see if I could bring together those people who can kind of, you know, garner crowds and say, look, you know, we are pledging here today that those 15 to 20 minutes we're going to take per person for 5 million people across the planet. And, you know, we're going to keep this up there on the agenda and we're not going to stop. We're still going to have fun while we're doing it.
Yeah.
But we're not going
to
stop.
Well, we'd love to hear just to that point of like how you engage people, how you bring them in. We'd love to dig into this question of like ensuring that the quality and effectiveness of the climate projects that Ecology funds, how you ensure that some of the unique features of your platform really set you apart from other climate action solutions. I understand you've got a couple different products, Ecology Zero, Impact Shop, the Climate Action Workforce, you've even got like an e-commerce integration. So we'd love you to just give the audience a kind of, you know, quick rundown of the different products that folks can engage with when they work with Ecology.
Absolutely. So we started on the simple side, theoretically simple, very simple for a customer or anyone to engage with, is to just fund a brilliant project around the planet. And we eventually called that the Impact Shop. And in fact, it started with the idea that as a subscription too, you know, you've got Netflix and Spotify subscriptions. What about a subscription that could help you reverse climate change? And if it added up all the £5 or $5 a month, and there's, let's say, 100 million of them, like there is for Netflix. Imagine all those $10 a month for the audience size of Netflix, but put into incredible impact. You know, we would theoretically be planting 1 billion trees a day, or, you know, funding the most incredible nature restoration projects, or, you know, even nascent carbon removal projects. And so we started with that, but it had to be that you believed in it and that you felt it as tangible, that you fall in love with it. So, you know, we have this kind of almost stream of project updates of what's going right. And also, importantly, when a project doesn't go right, it doesn't happen very often, but if we can tell you that the part of that project didn't work, and so this is what's been done to fix it, then anytime we didn't tell you a project was right, didn't work, then you would know and you would believe that the rest of it is doing really well. Whereas at the moment, many people are just not sure as to whether the project has been successful or not. So if we were really honest to say this one bit didn't work, and we're going to talk about how it didn't work, then you drives more belief that the 99 other percent of the projects are really, really delivering. And so that's on the kind of the funding climate action side. But that's only a small piece of the pie when you're thinking about restoring our planet. Companies have to reduce their emissions, and very, very quickly, half of their emissions by 2030, really. And so at the time, about 2-ish, 3 years ago, measuring your carbon footprint as a business is expensive. Expensive for small businesses and extremely expensive for large businesses. But with technology advances and our technology background, this didn't have to be like this. And so we wanted to create a piece of technology that would take a lot of the hard work, a lot of the manual aspects, and then make the costs 90% cheaper than the alternative at the time. And we wanted to kind of democratize carbon footprinting, give that access so any business can afford it. And that became Ecology Zero. And we worked with this incredible scientific advisor, Professor Mike Berners-Lee, who wrote a brilliant book called How Bad Are Bananas, in terms of, the, you know, a carbon footprint for everything, essentially. Incredible, really fascinating book. But he almost wrote the book on carbon footprinting itself. And so he helped co-design Ecology Zero with us. And so we're really proud that it's being rolled out to over about 1,000 businesses now who are on the Science Based Targets Initiative net zero journey with us. And, you know, then that could be the entry point for a business saying, like, I just want to know my footprint, and they come in through that. Or they could say, I'm not there yet, I just want to plant a tree. But we can just very subtly nudge them on the right path to looking at their broader strategy and the technology integrations and everything under the sun. That's one of our drawbacks at Ecology, is that all of a sudden we found ourselves tackling the entire domain of companies doing much, much better for the planet. It did mean there's a lot of work to do that. So that's why we do say we're the all-in-one climate action platform. I don't think anyone else has, you know, taken that slice of the pie like we have, but the advantage is that you can kind of pinball around so many different methods, and any action leads to progress.
Would love to hear about, like, we're a growth marketing agency, so we're very interested in how you grow and scale things, and particularly something as urgent as climate action. So love to hear just about the strategies that you employ to scale the platform and attract, you know, a really diverse range of members. And if you can discuss any specific partnerships or technological advancements that have been crucial to Ecology's success, we'd love to hear about it.
There's probably two different strategies we employed. So one was before we had funding, and so we had no budget. And then we had a different strategy for when we did have budget. And there's real parallels there. We learned a lot from both. And it's interesting when you don't have money. You know, it forces you to be bolder and very different and outspoken and do things that you are riskier. But there were some of the most effective moments that we had for growing Ecology as a brand and one with reputation. So just an example, during lockdown, the UK was supposed to be hosting COP26, and they postponed it for a year. And we were aghast by that, thinking you can't possibly just put off something that's just so important for 12 months. You know, that's a lost year. And we, you know, young and enthusiastic. And we thought, what about if we hosted like an unofficial COP and climate conference? And it just grew in scale. And then we just said, look, we don't have any money, but if anyone wants to talk here, you know, if they, you know, contact all the brilliant people that we can. And it ended up with 140 speakers over 2 days. and the future King of England was opening our event, and, you know, WWF were there, and it was magic. You know, on one hand, we were spending a lot of time not building our product, but what we were doing, we were investing in our brand and what our values were. And, you know, that was a real nice afterglow there. And so just as another example is how your, maybe like how your values can really underpin your growth if you lean into them and believe them enough, and if you think there's a bit of an opportunity there. And so Ecology was invited to the UK's first net zero accelerator, and it was really prestigious, and we were so hyped to be involved in this, and, you know, they can really open doors. And then about 2 or 3 weeks into it, I looked into who the sponsor was. I didn't really know them as a bank, and didn't know much of their history, and I couldn't believe it when I realized that they are the number one investor of fossil fuels in Europe. And this was just outrageous that they could be funding the net zero program. And that just didn't sit well with me. You know, we were being used essentially to essentially greenwash, you know, their brand. And so we withdrew, and then we'll go, oh God, this is such a bad idea, because this is, you know, great opportunity for us to kind of leapfrog into existence. But I wrote a little post on LinkedIn, and, you know, some people read it. It wasn't like a massive post or anything. But then years later, people still come to me, businesses still come to me and say, that was the moment I knew I could trust Ecology. You know, you had integrity, you demonstrated it, and, you know, and that's why I recommend you to everyone. And, you know, looking back on that, that's not what I went in to do. But I realized when you lean into your values on something, you know, with when it comes to climate, you know, in integrity and heart and impact are such important traits that if you plan your marketing and communication strategy around those core values and be bold and, you know, and have some risk aspect, then it can be rewarding. And, you know, I don't regret any of those kind of crazier things that we did in those days. But then we got investment, and then we thought about growth. Growth was just spending lots of digital media spends. And, you know, we burnt a lot of cash. And it's only now, you know, 3 years after our first proper funding, that we realize that we're going back like, okay, where are our values again? How do we talk to them? How do we talk about our values in a much more interesting and creative and bold way? And, you know, and let's just kind of think about that kind of startup edge again. And, you know, while we did grow while spending money, it wasn't the answer. And you think back to those early days, and, you know, what a superpower it is when you're resource limited, and, you know, and all the noise of, you know, other brands, you know, being bold, being totally attesting to the values that you're living and breathing, and putting that as part of your communication strategy. I'd do that over in a heartbeat.
Yeah. That really resonates, because we often encounter brands when they come to us and they've you know, they burn all their cash on paid, you know, paid ads, for example. And they're like, okay, now we need an actual organic strategy that is grounded in our, you know, brand values and identity. And, you know, can you help us like get it up and running in like a month? And it's like, okay, well, this, you know, stuff like this takes time, this kind of quality. So we often, you know, get folks who come to us after they've, you know, as you said, burn a lot of cash and gotten some value from it. Obviously, you can't deny the pool of the, you know, the reach of paid ads and what these platforms can do for you. But at the same time, over the long term, you need to like speak to your audience in authentic and sort of, you know, brand aligned ways. So really, really hear that, because that's work that we do pretty frequently. So
yeah, the budget, the extended budget, yeah, it just can accelerate those kind of brilliant ideas. But it, the budget itself is not the answer. Yeah. And we definitely learned a lot from that.
Yeah.
And yeah, you know, these are the kind of the killer opportunities. And also, you know, when you spend some money, sometimes you just like, that wasn't actually us. You know, we did something kind of glitzy, wasn't, put us in a different kind of area. And then, so it may have been some of your older campaigns may have not have had such massive reach, but maybe when it did connect with that prospective business, it did in a way that was more meaningful and more connected, and, you know, on a deeper level than maybe some of the kind of the, you know, the huge more spray and pray advertising that comes from kind of going like, we need to grow. And, you know, it's just, it's not spending, is it? You know it very well. It's about identifying and, you know, finding your authentic self again as a business, and, you know, pressing the reset button and then getting excited about what turning a new leaf can do for the business too.
And I think that's particularly exciting in the B2B space as well, because I think the tendency is for B2B brands to be quite stiff and, you know, because they're talking to other businesses and, like, you know, not have an identity that, like, or a brand voice that feels authentic, that, dare I say, feels human. That's why we sort of named ourselves Literal Humans, because even when you're B2B, you're still talking to someone who's the VP of marketing or the, you know, the head of comms or, you know, even the founder, and expressing your brand identity in that way. So it's still human to human, it's still H to H, even if it's B2C, B2B. And I think people forget that. And
H to H.
Yeah. And they don't like to, you know, take a leap and then, you know, you have this cycle where they burn the cash and they're like, okay, now we need to revisit our, and that's fine, you know, our brand identity and stuff.
We started on the consumer side and then B2B became a much larger opportunity. Just meant that we could scale it in a way that made sense for our own existence at the time. But it meant that we accidentally found, you know, a marketing opportunity where we kind of embodied the speaking to individuals, like they're consumers, like they're humans, and we did things differently. So it wasn't B2B marketing, and there was an advantage there where we didn't look around us too much. You know, we just carried on in a way that we wanted to do, that we knew that we could speak to the person behind the desk at the large company that we're trying to get to. And, you know, we engage the creative and arts sector with this incredible, there's one poet, George the Poet, there's a urban poet guy, and did this phenomenal piece for us. And, you know, it's just, we're B2B marketing fully at that time, but it was just the most kind of wonderful human creative thing we could do. And, you know, that was very well received. And it is good to kind of, you know, look only forwards and not look around you. Those moments have always kind of served as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, good. I think it's a great place for us to close. Elliot, thank you so much for jumping on the pod. I really appreciate your time today. I know you're busy. Where can folks find out more about Ecology, which you're the founder of and former CEO, and also Planetary Scale, your new venture?
Absolutely. So ecology.com, that's with an I on the end instead of a Y on the end. I'll be mostly hanging around there. And then planetary-scale.com. If your climate startup wants a little extra oomph, I would be delighted to see if I can help you. But thank you, Paul. It's been a real privilege to chat to you. And always a lovely opportunity to dig into how we will make progress on the thing that we love most, planet and nature.
It's a literal and figurative hot topic. So let's get on it.
Yeah.
this has been another great episode of Tech Can't Save Us podcast, brought to you by Literal Humans. We've been joined today by Elliot Code, the founder of Ecology and now running Planetary Scale. Elliot, thanks again for your time today. Everyone in our audience, please give us 5 stars, give us a subscribe, give us a share, give us a like, so we can keep bringing great guests like Elliot onto the pod to talk about great topics like climate tech solutions. So thanks, everyone. Have a good rest of your day.